You're listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, presented by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool.
I want to be the title sponsor. What's it going to cost?
I think around 10 million.
Yeah, I that's a bit out of my budget.
I have the impression that we are in the place where we have to be now.
Greg had a really bad back all last week, so we caught up on your podcast with me giving him a back massage and him listening to you guys.
That's a wonderful image.
With exclusive interviews and the best analysis on two wheels, this is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore, and I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
Hello, Lionel. We've got a packed but slightly different podcast today. We're going to be returning to London 6 Day. We had a report from the night three of the 6 Day last week, but we went back to the London 6 Day, and we've got a bit more of this inaugural event, which I think was a great success. We've also got an interview with a comedian. We've had lots of people on the podcast who think they're comedians. This guy's an actual comedian, Kieran Hodgson.
We've had a few jokers as well, haven't we? You know,
We've had it all, Lionel.
I'm the resident joker, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Let the listeners decide.
I'm flattering myself there.
Joker,
chancer, whatever you want to call me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're all those things. But Kieran Hodgson's an actual comedian, a very popular show at the Edinburgh Festival called Lance, the story of Lance Armstrong and his obsession with and disappointment in Lance Armstrong. Very, very, very funny. I went to see it last week at the Soho Theatre in London. He's now touring about around the country a little bit, and I went to interview him, and he tells us a bit about the show, and he does a very good Lance Armstrong impression and Bradley Wiggins impression, so we'll hear that. We're also going to update you a bit on our progress with our Trainer Road training programs, which we've started. That's why we're looking a bit tired today. But first of all, back to the London 6 Day, back to the London Velodrome, and I think, you know, we weren't sure about, I think, things on night three. There was quite a thin crowd, but the crowd built during the week, and by Thursday and Friday, when the race finished with a victory for Kenny de Ketelaere and Moreno de Pau, just ahead of the young British riders Ollie Wood and Chris Latham, there was a huge crowd, great atmosphere, and terrific racing. I think that the event can be judged a great success.
Yeah, I think maybe the day I dropped in was perhaps the least successful of the week. But you can only speak as you find. You know, the London Velodrome, it's not a nice intimate space, is it? And when it's not full, it's really noticeable that it's not full. And on the Tuesday when I was there, they'd not opened the top tier of seating, which did give it a feel that it was basically half full. And it was just a bit of a struggle. You know, the atmosphere wasn't as electric as I had witnessed at World Cups there. So that was really why the tone of my commentary last week, perhaps not overly favourable. But having said that, you've been back and witnessed something completely different. And I bumped into a couple of friends who went on the Friday night, and they said it was a rip-roaring success. So for a first event, definitely off to a good start, I would say, on balance.
I think the racing was tremendous. It didn't have perhaps the big stars that British audience you would think would draw a bigger audience, but the racing was really, really good, and I think that got the crowd, you know, people who were there on their feet and roaring, and there was a terrific atmosphere. I went back, as you say, Lionel, and spoke to a few more people. I chatted to Maurice Burton, who rode the last London 6 Day in 1980, some great stories from him. I also spoke to sort of current or recent 6 Day star Elio Kaiser, who was riding more of a road rider these days, but he was riding the London 6, and Nicky Terpstra, the 2014 Paris-Roubaix winner. So here is my second little report from the London 6 Day, Maurice Burton.
How's it feel for you to be back at a London 6 Day? You rode the last London 6 Day, didn't you? I guess this is a very different event.
Oh yeah, totally different event. Let's hope that they can make it work, you know, because I mean the 6 Days as we knew it wasn't working anymore, so let's hope that the change in format, that, you know, that it can work, because, you know, we'd love to see it continue.
Why was it not working? Were the crowds small? What was it, sponsorship?
There's a number of things. I think the first thing you've got to look at is that because of the fact that racing now has become a global sport, and in those days it was a European sport, the fact is that in the winter time the top riders didn't race outside Europe. Now they go to Qatar, they go to Australia. And so in those days, they were quite happy to be riding in the warm in the 6 days and be instead of training. And those are the top riders, you see, I mean the road stars. and it was the road stars like the likes of Merckx, Martins, De Vlaeminck, these people that brought the crowds, Moser, Cerrone, Argentine, in those days. I mean, in the likes of today, Bradley Wiggins, Mark Cavendish, yeah, the Belgian riders, the Dutch riders, the top, like Nicky Terpstra is here. If you have those top riders riding, then the crowds will come.
And yet, despite there not perhaps being any of those, you know, A-list stars, it's been a very good crowd tonight.
This is London, you know, and with the way that cycling, the popularity of cycling in the UK now is such that they will get crowds here, yeah. And I really hope that it continues that way.
You sort of made your name in the 6 days, so cycling's been riding the crest of a wave for a few years in the UK, but is it particularly pleasing for you to see a six-day race back on the calendar?
I'd love to see it come back at some point, because it's got to the point where I think there's six days this winter, and in my time there was 18 6 days in a winter.
And that was your main thing, wasn't it?
I rode 16 in one winter before.
Wow. And how is it? How do you feel watching your son Jermaine compete here? I mean, does that give you special satisfaction?
Yeah, I'm glad to see that he's holding his own, especially with his partner Mark. They're doing very well, you know, for such a young age. I'm very proud to see that they actually are, especially last night. I think the first few nights, you know, they were learning, you know, it's a learning curve, but I think they started to work things out a little bit, how it works a little bit, you know.
What age were you when you rode your first six?
It depends what you mean. I mean, I first rode in the amateur Ghent. My first amateur 6 day was 1975, which was Ghent. And I'll be honest with you, my partner actually sold the race, because they had to take 3 laps on us in the last hour, in the last night, to win it. Because we were, you know, otherwise they couldn't win. But anyway, that's life. But now my first pro six, I was just turned 22 when I rode my first pro 6 day. But that was a time Eddie Merckx was riding with Patrick Surcue, Danny Clark was riding with Freddie Martins, and Martins and Merckx had a bit of a issue at the time, and so there was a nose holds barred battle going on there.
Yeah, Merckx and Martins, yeah. Really, there was a huge rivalry there.
And we were in the me and Medhurst were in the middle of it all, you know.
Yeah. So that came out on the track,
but
as well.
We won the points jersey. We won the leader. We won the most points. You know.
So with Merckx and Martins, did that manifest itself in the race as both of them wanting to beat the other?
I mean, it was no holds barred all the time. It was, you know, Merckx was a very determined man.
But of all the riders you rode with, who was the most impressive?
Depends how you want to look at that. I mean, for the appetite to win, I would say Eddie Merckx. For the most versatile of riders, I mean, for a man who was world sprint champion, kilometre champion, and also green jersey in the Tour, then the Surcue. As a track rider, six-day rider, I have to say Danny Clark. Danny Clark is the only rider I'd never ever got the better of.
Now, I mean, famously the 6 days were as much about the off-track entertainment, the booze, the smoke.
Well, I mean, you know, on the track as well. I mean, yeah. there was always somebody. There was Willie DeBoscher, and before him there was Pete DeWitt, who used to go around in the devil with a whistle in their mouth, you know, and blowing and whistling and saying, "You're out this time," you know,
really?
And that sort of thing, you know, yeah.
But the smoke in particular, as a rider, was that something that you
the
were
smoke?
The smoke?
Well,
you...
it's something that we were used to, you know. I mean, all your clothing and everything stunk with cigarette smoke. But a lot of the riders actually used to smoke a cigarette or two now and again, because just to get your body used to it.
Really? Well, that was part of the regime.
Yeah, I used to have a cigar now and again.
the cabins that we've got here are still exist, but in your day, were the cabins places where you really did sort of live? Because you were racing, you spent a lot longer on the track.
Well, yeah, we spent longer on the track, but it was the days when there was one rider on the track day or night had already passed. In my time, it was 12 to 16 hours a day on the track. But when we wasn't on the track, sometimes, I mean, for example, in Zurich, there was no windows, there was no air. We just laid there on this thing and the sweat would just pour off you, you know? Yeah. That was where we, it was like, you know, it was unbelievable.
We're, and was it lucrative?
Yes.
No further comment.
There has to be something. And nobody rides around like that for 16 hours a day, you know, without getting something out of it.
Ilu, you're a very, very experienced six-day rider. I think you've run about 80 odd 6 days in your career. First time in London. How is this event compared to the more traditional 6 days?
It's a little bit different. Most 6 days are on a slightly shorter track, like Ghent is 166. Most of them are on 200 meter tracks. And this one is 250, which makes it a little bit different, bigger gears. The speed is high, very high. It's 18 teams, high level. But the program is really short. I only have to ride, like tonight, I have to ride three times. Normal nights, four or five times. It's not much. Normally in a 6 day, you're constantly busy. Here we're riding more on the rollers than we are actually racing.
Would you prefer to be racing more?
For me, it's better if it's racing more. If it's racing longer, then I can make a difference. If the chases or the medicine is longer, if it's 40, 45 minutes, then you can see some teams that are really in difficulties, and then you can make a difference. In a 20 minute chase or the long one is 30 minutes, I can't make really differences. But okay, we are leading, so we can't complain. The public tonight is really good, but they still have to learn a little bit the medicine. They don't really know what is going on, which is normal. They will grow, I think, but I think it's very good for track cycling, especially for six-day cycling, that there's finally a six-day in the UK here in London. It's great. Great to be here.
So you'll be back if this event carries on. You'd like this to become a sort of permanent fixture in the calendar?
Absolutely, yeah.
And have you got another busy winter season ahead of you? You're going to be riding all the major sixes again?
No, I don't do so many 6 days anymore. Before I did all of them. Now I'm actually, I'm in ITX Quickstep Pro Tour team on the road. So I've done the Giro, I've done the Vuelta, I have 90 race days on the road. So actually I'm pretty tired, but my home 6 day is Ghent, and that's in 3 weeks. So for me, this one is really welcome to stay busy till Ghent, to keep focused, keep training. Then after Ghent, I take a small break, and then I focus on the road season again for next year. So I will only do probably two, maybe one more in January, but I don't think so. Maybe
so a well-earned rest after Ghent. A lot of changes with the team, a lot of new riders in for next year. What are your thoughts on Marcel Kittel in particular joining?
For me, not saying anything about Kittel. Like, I hope he can make a good comeback. He had a very difficult year. I think in the past he's shown how much class, how much talent he has, and it can never go away in 1 year. So for us, for next year, I hope he can be back on his old level. But of course, we will miss Kev. For me personally, a lot, because he's a very good friend of mine, and I will really miss him next year. But also Kwiatkowski. All very good riders, but also very good guys that are leaving the team. The new ones, we still need to learn a bit. But
does it feel like quite a big change, quite a big transition in the team?
Yeah, because our leaders are gone, and we will probably have new leaders. Only the classic team has stayed more or less the same, with Bonen, Stibar, Terpstra, Kev, Kwia, Huran, big names that are leaving us. And okay, we have to see if the new ones, if they can fill that up.
Just finally, Ilio, a few young British riders competing here. First time some of them have raced at this level. What have you made of their performances and the way that they've ridden this week?
Of course, they are inexperienced, which is normal. They're very young. They've been riding really, really strong. Latham and Wood have made a big impression on me, and I think on everybody here. Personally, before the 6 day, I thought there would be more British riders. Of course, it's Olympic year coming up, and also for the sprinters, it would be nice if there were more of the UK sprinters. Would also be very nice for the public. I hope in the future there will be even more. Would have been awesome if Kev was here, or if Wiggins was here. It's not the case this year, but I think in the future it can only get better. But the guys that are here, really chapeau for the way they're riding, and go on like that, I would say.
Thank you very much, and good luck with the last couple of sessions. Well, Nicky Terpstra has just won a thrilling 40-lap Derny race. Very close finish in the end, but he's the winner, and he seemed to enjoy that. I'm going to try and get a word with him now. Good win in the Derny race there. That was quite a thrilling race. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it was a good final. In the end, I was in the lead. So I was in a good position because the guys that wanted to pass me had to take the longer line. So I had a bit of an advantage, and that's why I could stay in front in the last lap.
How do you communicate with your pilot in the heat of the race?
Well, the only thing you have to say is "Ho, stop!" If the legs are blowing. For the rest, you just have to follow the Derny rider, and he has to feel how the rider is. He has to look if he's still following, and he's got to have the feeling. That's the difference between somebody who's just riding on a motorbike or a good Derny pacer.
How do you find the adjustment from riding on the road to the track? Is it something you find quite easy to manage, or does it take you a while to find your track legs again?
It's not easy, but you have to prepare well for it. It's important that I've got the track school, so I'm used to it. Did a lot of medicine since I was little. Yeah, if you get the track speed, it's like...
It comes back.
Yeah.
And what do you think, what does it do for you as a rider? Do you think riding these sorts of events, riding on the track in the winter, does it help you in the summer road season?
I think for sure, but you have to do more disciplines. In the winter, I ride a lot on track, but also a lot on the mountain bike. Also on the road, and if you combine all those things, in the end, I think you will be a better all-round rider.
Because it's quite a contrast going from Paris-Roubaix, the cobbles of Paris-Roubaix, to the smooth boards of the Velodrome.
For sure, the surface is different. Actually, on the track, you learn to push power on the pedals, also when you're on speed or when you're on the flat, not only uphill. And this advantage I have, I also bring it to the cobbles. You have to keep power on the pedals, keep pedaling in a good cadence. That's a kind of way you can combine those disciplines.
What are your plans for the rest of the winter? Are you going to ride other six-day races, or are you going to get back into road training quite soon?
Well, this is my last race until New Year's Eve for sure. Probably I will do the Rotterdam 6 again in January. Won there now three times in a row with Ilja Kaisa, and yeah, probably I will try to defend that title.
And then it's back to work, back on the harsh weather, the cobbles of Belgium, the classics in February and March. You looking forward to those again next year?
Yeah, already looking forward. After this race, I will take a small rest period, kind of enjoy the time at home, because I've been on the move a lot the last months. And then, start training again, back to basics, every day on the bike or a workout, and preparing for a new season.
A few changes in the team for next year. You've got Marcel Kittel coming, Mark Cavendish going. Are you happy about those changes? Are you looking forward to riding with Kittel next year?
We had a real good sprinter. We get another new sprinter. I really liked the time with Mark. I think we achieved some nice things together. This is just a new chapter.
And Tom Bonin has had a terrible run of bad luck. Terrible crash recently. Have you heard how he's getting on? Are you confident he'll be back for the classics next year?
Oh yeah, he's recovering. Not well, of course, but he's recovering, and I'm sure he's a big champ, and he will be back. Don't worry.
The Telegraph Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Trainer Road, cycling's most effective training tool. Pair your power meter with over 800 workouts and 80 training plans to make you a faster cyclist. Visit trainerroad.com/TCP to try Trainer Road risk-free for 30 days.
Thank you very much to Trainer Road for sponsoring us throughout the winter, helping to keep this weekly podcast free. Thank you to them. But part of the deal with Trainer Road is that we also, myself, Lionel and Rob Hatch, and we'll be hearing from Rob in future weeks, that we follow Trainer Road training program, building towards a race between the three of us, a 4K pursuit, which will be around about early March, we think, where it's what we're building towards. But we did our FTP test this week, didn't we, Lionel, which established our sort of threshold power.
It did, the functional threshold power test, and ours...
air quotes around power.
Yeah, well, exactly, as you'll hear in a minute. I recorded the beginning, middle and end of my FTP test, which I undertook a couple of days ago. But yeah, we're off and running, three sessions a week for the next endless number of weeks. We're off to a promising start. We already know the pecking order, Richard.
I enjoyed it. I mean, we have established the sort of, you know, threshold power. Mine's marginally ahead of yours, but I compared this to a popularity contest between Donald Trump, Katie Hopkins, and Nigel Farage. You know, it's nothing to really boast about.
No, definitely not. Our numbers are not going to be troubling any skeptics. Put it that way.
Power to wait. I think well within the legal range, the range of what we believe is possible for our human beings.
It certainly is.
I thought it wasn't possible to only produce that many watts per kilo.
Well, I can certainly work on getting the kilos down and the watts up. I think I've got quite a lot of ground for improvement.
What's up? Yeah. No, I think we've all got a lot of grounds for improvement. As you heard in the jingle there is a landing page. You can follow our progress on the Trainer Road website, trainerroad.com/TCP. And so please don't share it publicly. It's for your private private viewing, but we'll be following the program. I've got my second session today, actually. Quite looking forward to that.
Oh, I'm a sort of a day behind you. I'm doing my second session tomorrow. Roughly speaking, we're doing about 3.5 hours a week on the turbo trainer at the moment. It's all been tailored to our own individual specifications, really. And the FTP, as you get gradually stronger, you can increase your functional threshold power according to your results in each of the turbo sessions. So it's like having a coach on your iPhone. I thought the little motivational messages that came up on the iPhone were motivational. There was only one moment where I wanted to pick it up and hurl it across the room.
Right, well, we'll keep you posted on that, and we'll speak as well to the coach at Trainer Road, Chad Timmerman. We're going to have him on at some point just to explain a little bit more about how this works. But again, great thanks, I think, to Trainer Road, and we're very grateful to the sponsorship.
Yeah, so let's listen to me getting started on the turbo trainer, finding my feet, literally dusting the cobwebs off the turbo trainer, which has been in my shed for the last 13 months, and getting started with the Trainer Road program. So to run through what I've done so far, I've fitted a sensor to the rear chainstay, I've fitted a cadence monitor to one of the cranks, and I've fitted a little magnet to one of the spokes, and I've downloaded the Trainer Road app onto my iPhone, and all of that kit together, very simple to do, even I could do it, I'm not technically minded. I did have to ring Rob to get a little tutorial, but that's because I'm sensationally dense when it comes to these kind of things. I just can't seem to make this kind of thing work. So if you're a normal person out there and you're quite adept at this sort of thing, then you'll be set up within about 5 minutes, I'd have thought. Anyway, the Trainer Road app is going to tell me my cadence and my power output, because I programmed into it the model of my turbo trainer, which is a Cyclops Fluid 2. And the training program is already on the app. All I have to do is press go, and there's a sort of 25 or so minute warm up, a couple of little tests in there, and then there are 2 8-minute sections which are going to give me my power output, I guess. So the first test of this winter long training program is going to determine how strong, or more to the point, how weak I am. The pressure's on because Richard and Rob have already done their tests, and so I know what their wattages are. So I'm wondering whether that is going to give me a little extra motivation. But I suppose I better just get on the bike. I'm indoors and the pedals are spinning and the app is working, and it's telling me that the sensor is giving information, but the resistance on the trainer doesn't really feel right. So I'm wondering whether I should tighten that back up again, or maybe I should just give myself a slightly easier ride today. I don't know. Off and running then, and the Trainer Road app's giving me information, a lot of information. Words coming up at the bottom with some messages telling me that at the moment we're going quite easy, but it's going to build up and be harder later on. At the moment, the target is to be riding at 100 watts, and it's quite difficult. I'm in a low gear and just spinning very easy at a cadence of around about 90. So this is a very much a short warm-up, a few minutes. Looks from the graph on the screen like there's two hard efforts. He says both efforts will be pretty uncomfortable but sustainable. How little they know me. Anyway, I'm going to have to concentrate on this for the next hour, so let's see how we get on. So I'm a few minutes into the warm down after the second of 2 8-minute efforts to judge my FTP per kilogram. I'm such an amateur this. I don't even know what FTP actually stands for, but it relates to your power weight, power to weight ratio, and it's a test that you can do using the Trainer Road app. I've got to say it was hard to do that, and I remember why I consider the Turbo Trainer to be almost anti-cycling, because for me the joy of cycling is actually being outdoors, enjoying the scenery and the fresh air rather than fixed to a contraption that doesn't allow you to see anything beyond the sort of floor in front of you. But I have to say, the Trainer Road app, you know, it sort of overcame a lot of those motivational hurdles that I have, because it was flashing up messages in a very sort of chatty, non-condescending, non-patronising way. Just encouragement, really, and just a few basic tips that help me concentrate on what I'm supposed to be concentrating on, instead of allowing my mind to wander and the effort to sort of fade off a bit. So on that basis, already an improvement on pretty much any of the turbo training sessions that I've tried to put myself through before. So I've got a couple more minutes of warm down, and then I'll find out my all-important figure and see where I stand in relation to Richard and Rob. So, the figure is in. It looks like my FTP is 210. I think Richard was 214, and Rob was maybe a little bit less, but he claims he took it easier. So that puts me around about in the middle at the moment. It'll be interesting to see how we improve over the next weeks and months. I was saying that the joy for me is cycling outdoors, but I did a team time trial on Sunday, and I was the weak link in the chain. And that wasn't as enjoyable as I'd hoped it would be. I wasn't able to contribute to the team, and eventually I got dropped. It just wasn't a great use of my Sunday morning. And it struck me, really, that I'm not going to get better or stronger just plodding away, racking up the miles in the old school way. I need to put myself through something like this. And so I'm hoping that this winter I'll be able to see a sort of noticeable improvement, and I'll be able to keep up with the faster riders that I often ride with, particularly when it comes to riding on the hills. More power means going quicker on the hills. It's as simple as that. So that's it for today. I can put the instrument of torture away for a couple of days, but we're off and running.
This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. Join us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search online for the Cycling Podcast.
Okay, well, now for something a little bit different in the podcast. I mentioned at the start I went to see Lance, the hit show from the Edinburgh Festival. Kieran Hodgson is the one-man star, the writer and performer. He does a lot of character impersonations, some well-known, some not so well-known. And I went to see him afterwards, and we did a little interview. He's going to be touring for a bit longer. He's doing another run at the Soho Theatre. We're going to go back. We're going to go with Rob Hatch, Lionel, aren't we, and Ned Bolting and Orla Shinui. All the sort of the podcast family are going to go Wednesday the 25th of November. So if anybody else is going that night, look out for us. Actually, Kieran Hodgson himself was extremely excited about Ned Bolting going along. He was very keen for Ned to appear, so he'll be He'll be bringing his A game that night, I think. So anyway, here is Kieran Hodgson talking about his show, Lance.
Well, the time I got back to my village, a total transformation had taken place. It was like polka dot bunting up everywhere, and bikes had been nailed into the wall above shop doorways in a joyous disregard for the integrity of the mortar.
What did you do to nail the character of Armstrong? You do a very good impersonation of him. He appears in the... You recreate the scene with Oprah, and you do a very good Oprah as well. But what did you do? What did you do to copy his mannerisms, his voice, his sort of his that look that you mentioned?
Lots of watching interviews of his, realizing that there was a lot of work on the accent, because even though he is he's from Texas, he doesn't really have much in the way of a southern drawl. Certainly he's no George Bush, but there are still little elements of a southern accent in there. But the main thing that I found was his eyes, his gaze, which was infamous while he was racing, and you can see it in every interview. There's such a clear intention there. He's always taking the fight to you. There's a bit in the show where I have him describe the stage 15 of the 2003 tour to Luz Ardiden, and he concludes his little description by saying, you know, before I know it, you know, I won the stage, and hey, guess I won the tour too. There's such an attack in that. He can't just say, I'm really happy I won the tour. He's like, guess I won the tour, so you want to come at me with what you have, you know, go for it. But at the end of the day, I'm the guy up there, you know, we're winning, we're doing what we want to do. You know, it's so forwards. That was the key to crack.
How did you feel about, you know, presumably you drifted away a bit from following cycling, did you? At university, if you were, you drifted away from the sport a bit, but how did you feel when it was announced in autumn 2012 that he was being banned for life, that all the rumours were true and, you know, his disgrace was complete? What were your feelings?
Well, I say in the show that when I watched the Oprah interview, I started to cry, and it's absolutely true. Even though I had lost touch with cycling, and I'd spent the intervening years of sort of, you know, 2006 was all that stuff, you know, Landis, and then 2007's Rasmussen and Rico. And so I knew cycling was totally bent out of shape. But I never questioned Armstrong. Up until the day someone said, oh, you know, he stopped fighting the USADA case. And it really made me sick. Because I'd felt at the time, you have all those allegations, especially in the French press, people saying, oh, it can't be true, sur notre planète and all that. And I thought, but no one would try and carry off a lie that big. You know what I mean? It was too big a story. It was too big an article of faith in cycling that it couldn't be that he was cheating at all. And it was just that sense of disillusionment, that sense of, oh, it really was just a, you know, big, there was no element of it that was pure at all. That really came as a very bitter blow, even though it had been a long time since I'd been hooked into cycling.
But the show, towards the end, it does sort of end with you back in Yorkshire for the 2014 Tour de France in Yorkshire. Very amusing scene. We heard the clip at the start of the interview, the Yorkshire promotional video for winning the Tour de France. Very, very funny. But you went back there and you describe in the show a sense of slightly underwhelmed, disappointed. Is that correct? Did you go and watch it, and is that how you felt?
I did go and watch it. I didn't feel that underwhelmed. It's a nice little narrative beat in the show. But no, I had the best time, and it was obviously it was in 2014, and a few months later I started having to think about ideas for this show, and the experience of being there was unforgettable, and I really wanted to in some way pay tribute to it and bring it to a wider audience and just say this. Certainly in my village, it was the best thing that's ever happened. And it was felt very redemptive after all, and that's why I put it in the show, basically, is after all that seemed to have gone wrong in cycling. You get to 2012, 13, 14, you have the two British winners who we all pray are...
Well, we're not doing a show in 10 years, Bradley Wiggins.
Completely clean, and I'm sure they are. So you have these British winners, and then it comes to Yorkshire, and this phenomenal response. everyone gets so excited. And you go back to my village, home Firth, to this day, all the bikes are still up, all the decorations still there, people are so proud of it. And it was wonderful to think that cycling, which more than any sport I think has been through the ringer of losing all credibility, all reputation, becoming a bit of a joke in the eyes of the general public, it still keeps going and people still love it more so than ever, and that's remarkable and really great.
I don't want to put you on the spot by asking you to do an impression, but you've already done Lance. You do a very good Bradley Wiggins as well. It's a brief line. Give us a little Bradley Wiggins. Go on.
Well, yeah, it's nice to be, cycling. It's great, isn't it? I remember my sort of thing about Bradley Wiggins when he'd won the gold medal for the time trial in 2012, and he was standing in front of Hampton Court Palace being interviewed by the BBC. I said, it's just been really nice to know there's all these people come out wherever we are. Yeah, wherever this is, it's great to be here, and I'm really happy. It's like Hampton Court Palace, that's where you are, you idiot.
Yeah, but do you think if you were, 13, 14 now, that Bradley Wiggins would mean as much to you as Lance Armstrong did 10 years ago?
Obviously, Bradley's done amazing things for UK cycling, and I was as happy as anyone to see him win. But for me, it still comes down to style. And Bradley's tour was very meticulously planned and carried out. And really, compared to the previous year's tour, the 2011 tour with Cadel Evans and the Schlecks and all that kind of, and Contador, it was quite dull. And fast forward to the Chris Froome era, which hopefully we're in, and I find Chris Froome far more inspiring on the bike in terms of the way that he races. I don't know, he's not so much of a personality off the bike in terms of his penetration with the British public. Obviously everyone knows who Sir Bradley is, so if I were a 15-year-old, I would doubtless be having arguments with my friends about who was better, and I would probably go, I think Froome's got it for me.
Mark Cavendish would be more, for a youngster, that sort of personality and fighting spirit and arrogance as well, I guess.
Yeah, but Cav's brilliant because he has that arrogance, but Cav always seems that if he's arrogant, it comes from a very sincere place. If he just loves riding his bike and racing and winning, and if he doesn't go right for him, he's a bit annoyed. And there's also that sort of Prince Harry trajectory that he's gone on of being the wild child who's bumping into people and mouthing off on Twitter. And now he's this elder statesman at the tour with his daughter going, "Oh, well, I didn't win, but my daughter's here, so I don't mind." And it's very endearing to see him grow up and mature in that way. And great to have so many people getting cyclists getting sports personality.
I went back home and I went straight into my bedroom. And there it was, that bloody poster looking at me, and it said, "Just do it." So I tore it down and I ripped it up and I put it where it belonged, in the mixed recycling.
Okay, that was Kieran Hodgson. I do thoroughly recommend his show Lance, if you can go and see it. Do. We've got our own performances coming up, Lionel, maybe not quite as funny, but we will be appearing at the London Sports Writing Festival on Sunday the 15th of November at 2 p.m. the Cycling Podcast Live. I'll sneakily just mention that immediately after that I'm doing my own event with Ed Caesar, the author of 2 Hours. I'll be talking about my book The Bolt Supremacy, and Ed,
can you leave that for the Athletics Podcast?
Ed will be talking about his book 2 Hours, about the quest around the Tour Marathon. That event will be hosted by Orla Shinawi, so if you can come along to Cycling Podcast Live, please do hang around for that as well.
That's at Lord's Cricket Ground, we should mention, in London. Tickets are available on the London Sports Writing Festival website, which you'll find using Google or alternative search engines, if such things exist these days.
Sure they do, actually, Lionel. Anything else, Lionel, before we wrap up? We've got, looking further into the future, what's that?
We're on at the Ruler Classic a few days after that.
Friday the 20th of November, yes.
That's right, in the evening. So if you're going to the Ruler Classic, we'll be part of the lineup there. I think sandwiched in between, I don't know who's on the same day as us, but over the course of the weekend, they've got Mario Cipollini, they've got Fabian Cancellara, Solara, Alberto Contador, Eddie Merckx, real star-studded lineup at the Rouleau Classic, plus us. So that promises to be a good weekend. If you Google Rouleau Classic, I'm sure you'll find details about that. And finally, looking a bit further ahead to next year's Tour de France, quite a long way off at the moment, but we've been invited to stay at a chalet in the Alps, La Chalet Gietas, I believe it's pronounced. I wasn't sure whether you pronounce the as on the end, but I'm told that you do by the owner, a man called Chris Cole, who's invited us to stay with him. So Richard, Daniel and I will be staying at the chalet, and we'll be putting on a cycling podcast live event there. We'll probably be doing the regular Tour de France show in front of a live audience. So anyone who's staying at the chalet that week will get the added bonus of witnessing a recording of the cycling podcast. And I think he's putting on a kind of itinerary, offering people the a bit of tour guiding so they know where to go and watch the race and alternative bits of cycling to do while they're staying at the chalet.
I think he's advertised that already, hasn't he? If you go on the Twitter feed for Chalet Gietas,
I did have the website address right in front of me a minute ago. Yes, it's www.chalet, and that's Chalet, hyphen la, hyphen Gietas, which is Gietaz.com. We'll also tweet about it from our Twitter feed at cycling_podcast.
Okay, and finally this week, we have our ninth Friends special going live this week. That is me in conversation with David Miller at the Dance House Theatre in Manchester recently, talking mainly about his own book, about retirement, the pain and the pleasure of being a professional cyclist. And it was a very interesting hour-long conversation with some fascinating audience questions as well. I think one in particular I'm sure will generate a little bit of discussion. So this should be going live this week, the David Miller special. That's our ninth special. We've got two more at least still to come this year, so do stay tuned. You become a friend of the podcast at www.thecyclingpodcast.com. £5, and that gets you access to all 11 of our Friends specials this year in 2015. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much, Lionel, for joining us. What do I mean by that?
I joined you, but I suppose the audience is us. We're all us, aren't we?
We're all us. In fact, I'm going to thank me for joining us in a minute.
It's been a real mixed bag this week, the podcast, hasn't it? Next week is a little bit special. We won't give away what that is, but next week's episode is one not to miss.
It's an extended interview with a rider, and we'll release more details about that in coming days. But it's going to be really good, I think.
Hopefully so, yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Richard.
You've been listening to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast. Thank you to Glass Pear for the music in this episode. For more information and to download more editions of the show, visit thecyclingpodcast.com.